and welcome to the Pope in the Pool. No hilarious joke to start us this week. Instead, I thought I would show off my editing and how I'm able to fade the music down. I can also turn it back up. I'm back on. This is part two of a two-part episode. I hope you enjoy. Just to let you know where we're at, we're halfway through. We've both given our 10 through 6s. We both have Annihilation inside Lewis Davis, Ex Machina and Drive left. I also have Suburbicon, and Hamish also has The Last Jedi. All the stuff will be plugged at the end. The quiz was in the last episode. Too much bolt my fix will be in this one. I hope you enjoy the show. We're jumping straight in from where we left off. Here we go.
Number five.
So, yeah, we're in the top five territory. I'm so shocked that I haven't heard Suburbicon on your list yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was expecting
that to be.
It's
actually my number one.
Right, and that's been really fun recording. See you later. So my number five is Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oh, okay.
So
I really hope when you say The Last Jedi every time, this is just
oh yeah,
it's just gonna be, I'm just gonna be anxious.
I keep forgetting that's not been mentioned yet. Yeah, so this film is actually worse than The Last Jedi. So yeah, I remember watching this. I didn't see it in the cinema, but I got the DVD.
So I seen you post on Twitter that you were like, "This is such a good film," and I was like, "Oh, maybe it's gonna put it really high." But I didn't like tell you that I'd seen that. I'd be like, "Oh, it's gonna put it really high."
Yeah, no. I was so moved by it. I went to Twitter to post pictures of Oscar Isaac, and there's some great pictures. Yeah, no, I remember watching it. I didn't get the DVD. Or no, I got the DVD. I didn't see it in the cinema. And I watched it and I was thinking, this is boring. Like, why has everyone been raving about this? I didn't get it at all. At this stage, I don't think I was, like, a fan of Oscar Isaac. I don't think I knew who he was or anything.
It's Coen Brothers as well.
Yeah, Coen Brothers. So I was kind of like, I was very, like, just unimpressed by it, being like, okay, maybe it's just not for me. So when we're doing the list, and this is probably the one I was looking least forward to rewatching, because it was like, oh, this was a hard slog first time around, like, this was really boring.
Yeah.
And then, like, literally within, like, the first sort of couple of scenes, I was like, okay, I was so wrong about this movie. It is fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, not a lot happens. Like, he is, like, so Oscar Isaac is sort of, like, down and out folk singer who's, like, just trying to make his way, like, through this sort of industry, trying to, like, have a big break. He's not done too well.
That's quite Coen Brothers, that not much happens.
Yeah.
It's just their films go on. If you go through their filmography, it's just less and less happening every film. So.
Yeah. So, like, I can understand a younger me thinking it was boring and thinking, well, that was a waste of time. But having, like, found a greater appreciation for film and different aspects of film now, yeah. I'm like, yes, this is my vibe. I'm loving it. I think it's hilarious. Like, it's so funny. There's so many, like, genius lines and things that are just amazing. It's like things like when he's talking to Carey Mulligan, who's like an ex in this, and she just says, like, he should never have sex again, and, like, he should have to wear double condoms and things. It's just like dialogue like that. And even the song they record, the, like, Please Mr. Kennedy,
it's amazing.
Adam Driver in it is just so good. Yeah. Like, it's a random seeing him pop up in a movie like this now that he's more famous and stuff. But
I think some of the jokes work better on this. I can see them working. I'm pretending I've seen it twice now. But I think some of them would work better. So, like, I think I would have found Adam Driver funnier having heard the song, his wee bit, because I was just obsessed with that song. I listened to it a few times on YouTube, but I had the clip before. Whenever they're, like, rehearsing, the two of them, like, him and Justin Timberlake, and then things doing his weird sounds in the background, I was more just confused by that. But then whenever you hear the song, I think going back and then seeing that scene, I was like, oh, that's really funny that he does that in the song, and it actually works in the song. Mm-hmm. Right there, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, what is this?
So I think it gets a lot better, or it would get funnier in the second viewing.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wanted to watch it a second time, and I might do that at some point, because it was, like, I do think it was something that would improve with viewings. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the Coen Brothers films are like that.
Yeah, that's true. Like, the whole soundtrack in general, it was just fantastic. Like, as soon as I finished it, I went and ordered it online. I was like, I need this in my life. I was listening to it on the way over here, actually. So it was playing whilst I couldn't find your house. But yeah, I don't know if this is a spoiler, it's just sort of, it's quite playful in its presentation of, like, time, almost, like, the approach, because it sort of, like, plays out, and you don't realise that certain scenes happen before other scenes, and you're like, oh, that, I didn't, like, realise that's what happened, but that makes so much sense, and I'm like, that's quite an interesting way to present the story, like, I don't think it necessarily needs it, but I was like, okay, that's a cool approach. Yeah. It's so random, and hilarious, and musically great, and Oscar Isaac is fantastic in it. It's definitely one of his best performances of any film he's been in. Like, I know most people would probably put this at the very top for his performances, like, because it's obviously, it's a leading role, and there's so much to it, and it's very much just like the camera's on him and his experiences and his sort of like sort of past experiences and stuff. So it's definitely up there for me as well in his best performances.
And like, I think it's at least top two or three of his performances.
And also, is that the cat from Captain Marvel? Because
I really hope so.
The whole time it's like, sorry, no, actually, I think did I rewatch this before Captain Marvel? I think I did. So I think in Captain Marvel, I was like, as Oscar's cat, like, Gus, you're from...
Is this before or after you fell asleep?
This... Yes, I did fall asleep in Captain Marvel at midnight.
You shouldn't say again, that's right. So just reviewing the half of the beating.
Yeah, it's just like, Bree's stolen Oscar's cat. I'm having a nap. That's it.
You were asleep and woke up and thought you were watching Sally and Davis like you could see the cat.
It's like, I don't remember Jude Law was in this. But yeah, no, very impressive Inside Llewyn Davis now, and like, I'm sort of like offended with myself that I like hate, like, I wouldn't say I hated it, but I just wrote it off completely when I rewatched it the first time, and it, like, if it wasn't for doing this list, I probably wouldn't have revisited it. So thank you for that. You've given me another Oscar Isaac film to fanboy over. So, and there's plenty to fanboy over because it's brilliant. So yeah, and it would definitely be up there now with one of my favorite Coen Brothers movies as well.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
I did really like it. I did think it was a really good film. Yeah, I really liked it.
This surely has to be Suburbicon.
So my number five, it surely is Suburbicon.
Yeah.
Which I think means that we've the same top. No, we don't have the same top. I've
Last Jedi.
Last Jedi. I actually thought before this that we might have the same top four, top five, but you obviously didn't watch The Last Jedi. You read Star Wars or something. Suburbicon. So I will preface this by saying that I don't know if it's the fifth best movie on this list.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it the fifth most.
Okay.
So I would maybe put it like seventh or eighth in quality. But this did loads wrong, but it also did loads of things right.
Yeah.
So I would rather rewatch this than say The Two Faces of January or A Most Violent Year, just because there was so much that I was like, oh, I really like that, I really like that, I really like that. Like, so Oscar Isaac's bit was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 105-minute movie, and it took 57 minutes before Oscar Isaac showed up, because I was watching it, and I kind of, whenever he popped up, I paused my, wait, I'm watching this because Oscar Isaac's in it.
Yeah.
I'm well over halfway through right now, like, what's going on?
I'm impressed that you paused that. That sounds like something I would do.
It was literally so I could tell. Yeah. Like, he's not in it for 57 minutes. And then 70 minutes through, he's gone.
Yeah.
So he's in it for, 16 minutes? But probably the best 16 minutes of the film. Like, so good.
Makes the most of his screen time, definitely.
So good, yeah. It's just, the worst bit is the forcing
another story into it.
I think it could have been done well, but it wasn't, and I also think they could have been good films separately. I also see why the Coen brothers tried to make it but then moved on. It's definitely older Coen brothers style. And I don't think, even if they had have made it, that it would have been a phenomenal film. Whoever didn't let that be made was doing their job right. But it was good. There was clever bits. It's a nice wee like world, wee setting that they'd made, and I thought it was really good at using that world to exaggerate parts of society.
Mm-hmm.
So like it really highlighted like biases and things, and I thought that was really clever. Yeah, you can see the tone of the Coen brothers coming through, But I don't know if that's just the influence of the script or if George Clooney was kind of going for that. Because I know he's a bit of a Coen Brothers fanboy.
Yeah, like definitely.
Before, I'm going to forget the name of it. What's the one set on like the film studio?
Oh, Hail Caesar?
Yes, before Hail Caesar, he spent years talking like, oh yeah, I'm going to be in this Coen Brothers film soon, going to be in this Coen Brothers. And they kept like putting it off and putting it off. So I know he's a bit of a fanboy, so I think he kind of wanted to make a Coen Brothers film rather than just make a George Clooney film. And I think that maybe influenced the tone, but he's just not as good at it. I think he kind of needs to find his own voice. But then again, I haven't seen anything else that he's directed, so I only get that from this film. I don't know if that happens in all of them.
I don't think there's anything particularly like standout or recognisable from his direction. Like, I never hear anyone talking about his direction.
He's definitely getting it because he's George Clooney.
Yeah.
He doesn't have like a style or anything like that, which is, I think it's a shame whenever people are getting like multiple opportunities just for being famous. I get that everyone makes a first film, and whenever you're George Clooney, it's going to be a slightly bigger film, you know.
He probably finance his own movies.
He's so good. So it's a little bit annoying. The acting was very good in it. Like I thought a lot of the performances were great, especially Oscar, but like everyone, like Matt Damon was good, you know. Everyone did well. The lack of an ending on the second storyline really, really brought the film down for me. Because it just, I think it would have just been a better film if this had been all connected a lot more. It kind of worked at some point. Sometimes it felt like working and sometimes it didn't.
I hadn't actually just sort of considered that. It does, that second storyline does sort of just end because you don't, like, does the family leave? Do they stay? Like, where do they go from there? It just, it doesn't actually address that. I hadn't sort of thought about that before.
I find the whole thing in general just a bit confusing. I had to, like, sit, like, once it went off, I kind of just sat there, like, so that happened. You know, just kind of trying to, like, puzzle out in my head. There wasn't really much of a story structure. It didn't really
the structure's
like, beginning, middle, end, but then part of it didn't even have an end, so obviously it's not gonna have a good story structure. It's kind of like trying to be a dark comedy, I felt, but there wasn't enough comedy for it to be a dark comedy. I think either less, so you can have a few moments in a not comedy film that are funny, or if you're going for like dark comedy, you need to like actually make me laugh quite a lot. Like, this just had the amount that it was a bit out of place when it happened. It happened so much I kept feeling it was out of place. But if it had happened more, it would have felt like a dark comedy. If it had happened less, it wouldn't have felt like a dark comedy. It would have been okay that there wasn't that much jokes in it. It was just a really weird
It's sort of like a low-rent version of Burn After Reading. I don't know if you've seen that. It's another Coen Brother one.
Oh, with
Brad Pitt. It's, I think it's going for that vibe but not quite getting it. So I think that sort of, if they had, if they could have achieved that vibe in terms of the dark comedy, it would have worked better.
Yeah, you can see, like, you can see the direction it would have went if the Coen Brothers had had it. Then you wonder what, George Clooney must have had to take stuff out of it to fit his storyline into it. So you wonder, was that, like, is that one of the reasons? But you never know, these things are just so annoying. It had so many problems, but I still enjoyed it. There was still things to admire about it. There was really good moments and a lot of, like, the ridiculousness of how it all ends is very good, very Coen, and very like enjoyable. And I find that they have some weird way of just letting you, like, everything's going to shit, and instead of you being like, oh fuck, what's going to happen, you just kind of sit there and just like enjoy
it. Love it.
you care for them about as much as like a villain in Home Alone. We just like bring it on, let all the shit happen.
These people are horrible. Fuck it. Do what you want. Make it as bad as possible.
So I did quite enjoy it all going to shit, which was good.
I'm pleasantly surprised it made it to number 5 for you. I was expecting that to be 10 or 9 sort of.
Really?
Yeah, just because like, I don't know if I've actually ever met anyone else who likes it.
Like it might be a stretch. No, everybody likes it.
Enjoyed it. We'll go with that.
Yeah, we'll say enjoy. I don't think it's good. I think I enjoyed it. Fair. I think that's fair. So, now we're going to go to a little segment without you that I like to call There's Too Much Pulp in My Fiction. Hello, this part of the show is called There's Too Much Pulp in My Fiction. It's basically a bit of time where I just complain about movies. It's kind of like my solo bit of the podcast. I just share what I think, whether you care or not. That's up to you. Feel free to skip ahead.
But here we go. So this episode, I wanted to talk about something I've been noticing more and more in films, which is underwritten concepts and how a lot of movies just think of an idea and then explore the idea without really forming a full story. So let me explain a little bit here. Within most story structures, we have a bit of a period of time where we just explore the concept. This is usually about halfway into the movie. It's where we explore things that a lot of scripts refer to as the fun and games or the set pieces. These are scenes in which something cool happens, maybe something funny, something clever, exciting or scary, but something that ultimately doesn't forward the plot. It's usually linked to the premise and it's kind of just exploring all the different characters and kind of scenes you can only do in this setting, seeing what can be done. If we think of a horror movie, this could be a few minor characters getting killed off, just showing off what the villain can do, doesn't really forward anything, nothing major, nothing really changes. Those are characters that are just there to be killed in these moments. If you think of a comedy, it's just funny set pieces that are there really just because they're funny. They don't forward the plot. Their only purpose is to make you laugh, and they don't really add anything to the film other than a laugh. Or this could be a detective looking for clues but not putting anything together yet. It could just be cool interview ideas they've had, but stuff that really doesn't have any impact anywhere else. But there are ways to make these parts of the movie interesting, exciting or iconic, but a lot of the time they just aren't important. They're usually at the first half of the second act, usually take around 15 minutes, and some movies don't even include them. Here's my issue. Some movies make this segment far too long. In a lot of movies, the first 10-15 minutes sets up the premise and the last 15 minutes ends the film. The other hour or so is just filler. Some horror films become instantly forgettable just because they set up the premise, slowly kill off each character, and then at the end, all the revelations come along with the big finish. In a comedy, we can have setup, an hour of funny-ish set pieces, and a big ending. Sometimes the big ending is just the funniest set piece, but at the end, and then their problems go away. The core issue with this is that what we have is a premise and some jokes. What we don't have is a story. If your idea is just a premise and jokes, it's fine. Go make a sitcom, find 30 minutes of jokes for every episode. That's what that's for. But films should have a plot. They should have a start, a middle, and an end. They're a contained story in 90 to 150 minutes. If all you have are jokes, and they are great jokes, you might manage a good movie. If all you have is creative horror scenes, you'll probably do quite well. But this isn't what makes a good movie. This isn't what makes a lasting movie. We need to start expecting better from our films. People who are writing films need to find a story that works alongside their premise, or if they can't do this, just do something else. Look at the films that have lasted many generations. The core of a great film is a great story. Let's go back to the list.
Back from that, we're going to go back to the list now. Okay. And do our top fours. I usually do, although there's 10 and there's two segments, I kind of keep top four for the end because we've probably already said some of this. But we actually have three the same.
Yeah.
If I'm getting this right. So we both have Annihilation, Ex Machina,
Drive,
and then you have The Last
Jedi. Top four, baby.
And I have Inside Llewyn Davis.
Okay, yeah, to be fair. Yeah. That is probably, if I had to guess the top four for you, I probably would put that. I might have put Force Awakens in there, just because I know you're a Star Wars fan, and I knew that's a well-received film, so I was sort of expecting that to be higher. But that's probably the correct top four. But
yeah, I will say that this is the moment for me when these get really good. This is like my recommend people, tell them go watch these films. These are good films. Yeah, definitely there is significant difference in how good some of these are, but still really good. I think number one and maybe number two as well are two of the best films that exist.
Yes, I think we're probably all gonna have the top two. Same. Okay. I think they're gonna be the same. But
do you know where I put Drive in the first episode? No,
I'm not. I don't.
I'm not saying, in case someone watches these in reverse or whatever. But yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So actually put it in number 10. I was kidding. Which is Oscar Isaac films are so bad. So, do you want to go for your number four?
Yeah, I feel like you're going to absolutely lose your shit if I don't say The Last Jedi for number four. So thankfully it is four is The Last Jedi.
Thank fuck.
I, like, originally I had, same as you, I sort of thought I was going to have Force Awakens, Last Jedi exactly together, because I was I don't really know what sort of separates them. Apparently Inside Llewyn Davis does. So, but yeah, Last Jedi, I love this film. Like, I remember going to see it in the cinema, coming out of it, I was like, that was great. I loved it. Like, it got me so pumped
literally
up.
The second it ended, I turned to, it was quite a big group of me and my friends to see it, and I went, well, that was shit. And they all, like, well, not all of them, but most of them laughed, thinking that I was being sarcastic, because they all loved it so much. Like, they were like, good one, say that louder, and all the time, like, all the Star Wars fans will be like, yeah, that's funny. But I was genuinely, like, going out, like, that was shit. And I was driving home with a friend, and I was giving a lift home, and he literally turned around, and he was like, I thought it was shit too.
Yeah.
I was just scared. Yeah, I think he also thought I was joking. Was like, I remember time ending being like, oh, it was really was shit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I find that very funny. But thought I was joking. Yeah. I was like,
no, that's actually my opinion.
Yeah.
I know, because I actually went to see our friend Simon, but he didn't get a ticket until like about like a month after I had a ticket. So we actually ended up in different screens. So we like met up, I think, like just after, like outside. And I remember just being like, oh, it was great. And he was just like listing things that he hated about it. And I was like, please stop, you're killing my vibe. But yeah, no, I feel like there's been a lot of that. Like, I can completely accept people's opinions about disliking it. Like, give fair reason for it, but there's been so much hate for this movie online. And I'm just like, okay, you don't like it, that's fine, like, that's your opinion. If I don't like a movie, I don't like it, that's fine. But I'm not going to constantly point out things that I don't like about it. I'm not, just for the sake of it, obviously in a discussion like this is what we're doing, we're unpacking it, and that's good. But it's just when you see people like going off about it, I'm like, okay, we get the point, you don't like it, why are you wasting your time like talking about this movie you don't like? Like, tell us about a movie you do like.
What really annoyed me was when people sort of slagging off the people rather than the film as well. That really annoyed me. Like your girl Kelly that we were talking about, like, she got a lot of hate, and Ryan Johnson got like so much hate. You're just like, calm the fuck down, it's a movie. Like, people have made horrible movies before and haven't got this much hate. Except just because it's Star Wars and such, like, a real like militant fan base. Like, whenever there's like something that they don't like, it's like they feel like they have this right to like shit on or whatever. And it's like, no, this is still just a film. Like, you just get on with your life. If you don't like it, don't watch it. That is fine. Like, suck it up. Don't be a dick about it.
Exactly, because there were so many movies last year that got like critical acclaim and a lot of like online film community adored and like constantly post about, and I am all for that, post about movies you love. But it's really annoying when you don't like the movie, and it's very easy to just to like sort of bite back on those things and say, actually, I hated it. But I've sort of tried to stop myself doing that, because it's not worth it. That people who like the movie don't want to hear it, and like you're only complaining to yourself then, really. So
That's definitely what I use Twitter for, the minute, just shouting into the void, like just opinions.
Pretend that someone's listening and someone cares somewhere.
Someone cares. I actually tweeted that I liked a YouTube video, and the YouTuber himself retweeted it.
Yeah.
And I got like 12 likes, and it felt like my phone was going to explode. So just me on Twitter. I was like, oh my desk.
What is happening? So but yeah, so more about why I actually love The Last Jedi and why it is my favourite Star Wars film. So this
Your
is actually
favourite?
Yeah, it's my favourite, like, Star Wars film.
Favourite, like, over number the one. Originals?
Yeah, number one.
What?
Yes, it is.
What?
Like,
it's my least favourite. Like, it's
like literally 10 of, like, including like Solo, Rogue One.
Solo and Rogue One would be debatably there, but in my defense, I haven't finished Solo because I turned it off halfway through. I refused to go to the cinema after The Last Jedi. Watched half of it and was like a bit tired, but it was a good movie. I would have stayed up, but I was like, no, I want an extra hour sleep.
Yeah.
So yeah, just turned it off. So I haven't actually seen Solo to be like, oh, it's worse or it's better. I just it wasn't finished.
Yeah. No, this is flat out number one. Like, not even a competition. Like, It's so easy for me. It's like, yeah, it's my favourite. Like, to be fair, I have an interesting like history of Star Wars, because I didn't watch it growing up.
Okay.
I only watched it probably when I was in university. So, like, I haven't been like this lifelong fan. Oh, yeah. Like, I don't have the nostalgia attached to it at all. So,
See, I'm in this weird situation where I had episode 1 and episode 2 on VHS back whenever I was young enough that I didn't have like any awareness of what a good film was, so just like looked at it and went, lightsaber fights is so cool.
Yes.
So I actually have quite a lot of nostalgia for those two, which is weird because a lot of people think they're shit, whereas I watch them, but I watch them through a, like 8-year-old's eyes, and like, oh, it's so cool.
She like, stop shitting on my movies. But yeah, it's quite funny as well, because a lot of the things you didn't like about this film and didn't work for you are literally the things I have written down that worked for me. Okay. So like the first thing I have is the opening sequence, and I love the comedy that's in it. And usually that annoys me. Like, I have a real history of like writing in my reviews, like, the comedy didn't work here. It completely undermined the tension. It completely undermined what they were trying to do with the scene. I'm like, just take it out. It doesn't need to be there. But no, I like that comedy. And then when that passes, then that action sequence at the start, I was just in the cinema, like, this is incredible. Like, I thought it was so well done, and like, I felt genuine, like, fear, for the characters. It was like, I feel like anyone could die at any point. Like, it's, you sort of watch films, you're like, oh, they're going to survive, they're a main character, like, they're going to be in the rest of this movie. But like, I was just like, Poe could die here. Like, I was just like, I don't know. Who is safe?
See, I didn't think anyone could die. I didn't think anyone new could die.
Yeah.
I thought, like, oh, maybe Luke or Carrie's going to die.
Yeah.
You know, but not, like, a main character. So, there was one moment when I thought, whenever Finn's, like, suicide bombing.
Yes.
Like, I thought, oh, shit, he's going to die. He's going to do it. But it really annoyed me because your woman, Kelly, catches up and saves him.
Mm-hmm.
But they were flying at the same speed.
Mm-hmm.
Beside each other, she turns around and goes back for a bit. He puts the throttle down, and she still somehow catches and comes in from the side. Like, how does that work logistically? Like, overhead shot of the like math and physics and that, because like, that just doesn't make sense. Like, why is her ship like 10 times as fast and able to do that? That annoyed me. But I thought he was legit just going to save him. Like that, I thought that would have been a really good moment. It maybe wouldn't have been like as good as an actual lightsaber fight to end it, which is what I wanted. But I thought it would have been a good moment.
Yeah. I will admit there's a few things that I can say aren't great about it. I think some parts of the script are pretty bad. Like, I think a lot of, some of the comedy doesn't work because of the way it's put in to certain scenes. Like, it's kind of jarring. Like, I think the bit when Luke is talking to Rey about where she's from, and like, that's a funny joke that Jakku is like nowhere, but the way it's put in isn't good.
Yeah.
It's just quite like forced. You're having this like deep chat about who she is, where Luke, she's from.
Luke wasn't very like quippy in the original, so it doesn't feel like it works with his character.
Exactly, it feels more like they're trying. It's Mark Hamill. It's not Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
So I think there's certain bits like that. I'm like, eh, that's a funny joke on paper. If you were to say that to me, just like chatting about like the Star Wars universe,
like a Han Solo line.
Yeah,
Han Solo wasn't there anymore to give it to.
Mm-hmm. So like, okay, look, you have to say this now, but yeah. So certain things like that, I'm like, okay, no, and like the whole casino bit, could do without. Take it or leave it. Not a big fan of that, but there's so many like other bits that I'm just like loving it. So it's like, I love the chemistry between Poe and Leia. I thought that was really fun, and I love how like the first Force Awakens, you got this dynamic between like Poe and Finn, and then this time you've got it between Poe and Leia, and like they keep doing interesting pairings, which I like. So it's like the thing where she's like, you can't just get in an X-Wing and blow stuff up all the time, and then shit hits a fan, he's like, permission to get in an X-Wing and blow stuff up, and she's like, yes, go. It's just like things like that really worked for me. And then like, I know people had issues with Mary Poppins, but I was like, Luke literally says, I looked out for this quote because I was like, this is my defense of this scene. Was like, the Force is the energy between all things. So it's the energy between space and like air, and I was like, Leia's boss ass bitch, but like, she can manipulate it. And
it's not that she can't, it's not that it can't be done, it's more that it hasn't justified why she has that ability. If you kind of,
so maybe they just shouldn't have blown her up. And
like, say there was someone on the ship with the Force and they brought her in, that works.
Okay.
But it's just that, like, they've completely unjustified that she has that ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why the fuck hasn't she done any other four shit for the other however many yeah. movies?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if she's only in four more of them and she's not in all of them for that much,
mm.
she's still could have been trying in the background to levitate something.
But maybe she needed this, like, absolute life-threatening, crazy, like,
yeah,
absolutely, but like,
there's no, mad there's no moment. Build up, so it's no payoff.
Like, yeah, I remember watching being like, eh, not sure about this, but I've grown to become okay with it. It doesn't annoy me in the film when I watch yeah. it now. I can justify it in my own head, and it doesn't stop my enjoyment of the movie, so I'm okay with it. I just show like it's all about those dynamics for me, and I love like the between like Kylo Ren and how like he's just like, spoiler warning if no one's seen The Force Awakens, he's just killed his dad in that film, and yeah. I love the hesitation he has when he can't shoot on Leia's ship. Like, he has that moment where he's like, I can't do it, and I love that, like, oh, they're still lighting him. I'm like, yes,
yeah.
that for me, I was just like, oh, this is interesting. I'm like, what's gonna happen? And then someone else just hits the ship and it's like, ah. So it's like working on so many levels for me. I love more of the comedy, like those wee fish nuns who had me like in hysterics, like when the wee rock falls down and their wheelbarrow yeah. goes, and they just like the reaction
yeah.
is just priceless.
I didn't really like them, they were great.
It's like, I was like, that's so Star Wars to me, like just funny little things like that, which are so random, wouldn't work in anything else, and I'm just like, that is, you've done that so well. So those things were good.
But that's, I think those jokes work so much better because that moment is her being like, oh crap, what have I done? And then the comedy adds to that,
mm-hmm.
rather than the comedy in some other parts takes away yes. from the tension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can appreciate that. And I can definitely see like jokes like that work 100%. You don't have to think mm-hmm. about it. You're like, yeah, that's funny, that works in this scene. Yeah. Others you kind of feel like, eh, not sure. But like,
yeah, yeah.
I can sort of work with it. I love the throne room sequence. And I love... I know I can understand what you said about the mystery box thing and things being set up, and I totally got that. And I kind of just loved that a lot of them were just shut down completely. I can understand the frustration with it completely, but because I'm like, I wasn't that caught up in those things. Like, I know so many like fan theories and stuff, and I was just like, this is like a big fuck you to all the people who had all these fan theories. And I was just like, yeah, it's like, why does like Rey's parents matter? Like,
I quite like that as well, but I liked it whenever it happened with Rey's parents.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of did it with everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of those to be like, fuck you, this isn't gonna be what you think. Yeah. It's really good because then you're like on edge about what the rest of it's gonna be.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all that, and you're like, oh, Ryan Johnson just doesn't give a fuck about episode 7. Like, JJ Abrams was like, well, sell this stuff up for you, and he went, nah,
I'm gonna do this instead. But yeah, and I love that bit in the, like, it's sort of leading up to the, it's sort of, I'm not sure if it's the final act or, the structure's so weird, I don't really know if there are acts in this movie, but.
Yeah, Star Wars in general just goes in so many different ways, so many arcs and everything.
Yeah, but I love the bit where, so like, Rey and Ren are fighting over the lightsaber, Poe and Leia are watching Holdo in the ship. And there's Finn and Rose there having that thing with Captain Phasma, and all those things are going on at once, and that scene is edited so well together, like it builds perfectly, all the things happen at once, and I'm just like, that is really impressive that they have been able to juggle those massive things happening all at once. And this has got me like on the edge of my seat, like I was really living for that moment.
See, that's really good. But what they've done in like all the past Star Wars movies, especially the originals, is that big moment where they're kind of cutting between things is the final thing.
Yeah.
And that's what it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. Like, even that throne room fight, one of the things I really like about the throne room is they had so many things and like special moves with lightsabers. A lot of the time, like, lightsaber fights have just been done like standard sword fights.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, that was kind of, like, more martial artsy and those more creative things. And especially whenever you have, like, the Force, which is kind of like a superpower. I mean, it's not referred to like that way.
Yeah.
But it basically is. It's basically telekinesis, and you can do stuff with it. But they don't really use it that often. It's very thing. Like, so whenever they're doing, like, all this back-to-back fighting and they're teaming up, like, it was, like, a really good fight scene. It's probably one of the best fight scenes, other than the people down about in the background. But,
yeah.
That just try not to notice it. But it's probably one of the best fight scenes in all of Star Wars.
Yeah.
like genuinely. So I can see why you do love that. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think how much I was like loving the film at that point just started slowly decreasing. After yeah. I think that's what always happens after the peak of a movie, it starts slowly decreasing. So the longer it goes on, and it mm-hmm. does go on a good chunk longer after that.
Yeah, no, I remember sitting in the cinema being like, okay, they're going to cut now. They're going to cut now. That's going to be in. They're going to, oh, no, it's still going. And I'm still enjoying all the bits, but I was like, this momentum doesn't, it's not working. Like, you hit this high and then it just goes. But I, like, it's more of an expectation thing for me because now I know to expect that. I know that that's not this point. So I'm like, okay, I can go with it. And there's enough in that sort of final section. Like, I love the comedy between Hux and Ren when they're like trying to like, they're vying for sort of the respect of the men because they're sort of in charge now. And it's really funny to watch that dynamic play out. And I thought that was funny.
Snook was a little wasted, I thought. They sort of just this big villain. That's fine. I mean, they don't have to use him.
Yeah.
But I just think, why? Like, but then again, that's J.J. Abrams has brought him in.
Yeah.
And not had an end goal for what's going to happen with him. So, Ryan just went, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. I'll just kill him then.
Yeah, they definitely had all the best bits in terms of action and, like, momentum in and around the throne room. So, I completely get that. But, yeah, no. I still just love everything about it. Like, there's... Like, I don't dislike the casino bit, but it's not great. I don't love it. That's the only section where I have nothing really overly positive to say. But I honestly just think I love, like, the first film is Force Awakens introduces us to all these new characters. They've reunited most of the old characters in some way. It's sort of done all the groundwork. And then this one just goes crazy and, like, does stuff you don't expect. It, like, has these crazy, like, fight sequences like we've never seen before. It's just so different, and I think that's why I liked it. It was so just, it went against the Star Wars formula, and it just did something so like random, fresh, and it just worked for me, like, on every level. Like, so yeah, it's comfortably my favorite Star Wars film, and I didn't think it was actually going to go as high as this, because since, like, honestly, the, like, a year, I think, when was this, like, 2017? So, yeah, it's been, like, a year and a half, probably, now. Like, all the hate for it online did dampen my spirits about it slightly. It sort of made me think, oh, this film isn't as good as I thought it was. And I probably would agree that it's not as good as I probably, like, the quality of it doesn't match how much I love it.
Yeah.
But it sort of did dampen my spirits about it. But when I rewatched it, I was like, no, I still love this. This is still, like, works for me. I'm having a blast with it. Love the characters. Love how they're interacting. So I'm just like, yes, Last Jedi. Love it.
I think how much I've hated it has, like, dampened over time.
Yeah.
So, like, I think maybe in, like, 10 years' time, I was talking about it. But I think also, like, whenever people point out things wrong with you with a film and you're already against it, just gives you more fuel to, like, shit on it.
Definitely.
Like, every film criticism that there's out there, I bet people who hated it, like, I know them all and I accept them as if they're my own opinions, but probably at least half of them I didn't think up of. Like, that thing with the people in the background was pointed out to me, and there's so much stuff like that that there was enough in that I already didn't like it, but I think people just, like, out of field of the fire. But now that's kind of settling and kind of less annoyed. I think a lot of the time the annoyance was at the time because you build, well, you're not as massive a fan of it, of Star Wars, but you build it up in your head. Like,
yeah. Oh,
I'm going to Star Wars in, like, 2 months. So buzzing already. And then for it to break all those, like, things that you're expecting is quite annoying.
Definitely. But, yeah.
I really liked thinking about it, and this is kind of turned me into thinking it's a better film than I thought it was. The way they talk about the Force, like, the way, because you were kind of saying, like, the way the Force is kind of talked about is like this entity between everything. Mm-hmm. I thought that was the most the Force has ever been described.
Yeah.
Because a lot of time, like Jedi is kind of described as if it's like a religion or something.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, it kind of just describes this energy between everything. And I felt like that really tied everything together. It was a really nice message.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how Luke described the Force and how it couldn't end and getting rid of all the books and everything. I felt like that was a lot more modern. Like, you don't want these series of films that are probably going to go on for the rest of time, basically, now, because Disney's going to get at least one a year forever, and they're probably going to get up to 3 a year, the same as Marvel ones at some point. But you don't want them whenever they're theoretically based around this weird space religion. Like, it's kind of a weird concept. Like, because that element wasn't as much in the originals, but then it was kind of brought in the prequels, and it's kind of just a bit like, what? It's kind of like they got rid of it and just made it force this kind of thing that exists between everyone, and even like the wee kid who like does the thing with the brain. That's cool. And what they need to do is then go edit in a few scenes of Carrie doing things like that.
Yeah,
all the four that she was in before that. So then Mary Poppins isn't as weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah,
I'm surprised actually. I haven't seen any like edits of songs for the new Mary Poppins films over that footage. I might have to do that.
I've definitely seen what do you call him from Guardians of the Galaxy? His face.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's like, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. Yeah, I've definitely seen lots of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Well, I think we'll leave it on that note then.
Yeah.
Mary Poppins, number four.
So my number four. So you've all your top three are still left in my list at this moment. Until now.
Oh,
Annihilation, number four.
Okay, I can work with that.
So, I thought this would have been my number three going into it, but then that's just because, like, I was genuinely expecting the Star Wars ones to be the bottom two, and these three to be the top three, and the other five just to kind of be their own list in the middle.
Yeah.
Those were the five that I hadn't seen before, maybe.
So, have you seen Annihilation before?
So, I had seen Annihilation before. So, you recommended Ex Machina to me, and I'm pretty sure I went home and watched it the night you recommended it. Like, but you recommended, like, 15 films, I think we both just sat talking about films.
Yeah.
So I went home and watched it. It was like the one that stood out, and I was just blown away by it. So then, like a few weeks later, watched Annihilation and loved it at the time. Honestly, thought it was like genuinely brilliant. Still think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
But I found that it wasn't quite as good when I rewatched it. It kind of let me down the second time round.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still think it's a phenomenal film. I really enjoyed it a lot more the first time, but I think that's because there's more going on with like the mystery around it the first time. And I know a lot of people really complained about it, that it didn't make sense and stuff, and that it was kind of a bit stupid. And I bought into it all. Like, the weird science, it doesn't fully make sense, maybe, if you like properly take time and analyse it and think about it. But in the movie, at no point did I go, that's dumb.
Yeah.
So for me, that works. Like, that's, like, even if it's sci-fi, like, there's weird things that have happened in sci-fi that we've accepted.
Yeah.
It's fine to think. It is scurry. The scur does actually work. There are some fucking terrifying things in that. Yeah. Like, the big monster that can, like, do a human voice out of it and shit like that. And even just the way they, like, slowly, like, build up, like, what the fuck is the shimmer thing? What are we going into here? Like, that is just really well done. Like, the slow build works so well for this movie. Yeah, there was just so much. It's such a good concept. There's so many really good, unique scenes that just blew me away that I just can't take my eyes off. Like, even the second time around, even though the mystery isn't there about it all, the scares still work.
Yeah.
It's just those scenes the first time, whenever you're both scared and thinking, what the hell is this? That's a far more intense, better feeling better, like, thing. Experience. But that doesn't make it, like, it's definitely not a bad movie second time around. It's still a great, but first time it was probably like a 9 or a 10, whereas now it's like, so I don't think it's like a classic rewatch film all the time. I'm not going to like sit and watch this like once a year for the rest of my life. But it was like so, so good. Yeah, Natalie Portman's phenomenal. And I like great. I like the way we were saying earlier, like the female cast without them being like, it's women, you should like it. Like, that was really good, and it was really well done. And like, I think about 2 minutes into it, before they'd even got to the cast of all women, I was already forgetting, like, oh yeah, this is a female cast. I was just like, this is a really good movie.
Definitely.
Which I like, that's the way that should be done. Oscar's character's so good, he does that really well. He kind of has a dual role, so that was really good. So many clever moments. I thought that, like, even the concept of how they lose time, that's a really good way to, like, forward the plot and get us real into it really quickly. The videotapes were genius. I thought they were so good. So my housemate watched part of this film with me, and he was like, gonna go to bed before the videotape where they cut the guy open. And I was like, just 5 minutes, watch this. I was like, this will convince you to, like, finish it off yourself another time. And yeah, it was basically just sitting being like, what the fuck? You know, it was good. It was good. Like, I loved some of those scenes. And I also really like, this kind of goes for both Alex Garland films. He makes such unique looking sci-fi. Like, yeah, there's so much within sci-fi just looks the same. Like, it's all just the same robots, the same weapons, the same whatever. But this stuff, like the creatures in this, like, this was set in like a jungle. Like, how many sci-fi films are set in jungles?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there is others, but there's not a big collection. Like, everything else is like spaceship. And then obviously there's like Ex Machina, but we'll talk about West Unique when we get to it. Yeah, I get that some people find it confusing, but I don't think I fully understood it.
Yeah.
But I don't think they made it bad. I kind of just accept that I didn't fully understand it. It was really good chemistry between all the characters. I really liked the scene that was kind of like, it was a wee bit exposition-y, where they're like in the boats and explaining why everyone's there. But I thought that was really well done. Especially the first time, I didn't go, oh, this is the exposition of why they're thing.
Mm.
The second time around, I did notice it and kind of go,
I was the same. Oh,
but I do like that. But I think that's fine that some of the things don't land the second time still. Yeah, really well paced. There's so much in the film to keep you going. The ending's a bit random, but I did like it.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably what makes it number four here is just the ending.
Yeah.
Is that it didn't go, both the ending and me not enjoying it as much the second time around is what made it number four. It would have been, if I had been watching this for the first time, I think this would have been higher than at least one more film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like the cutbacks to the relationship. I feel like they were the perfect amount of them. There wasn't so much that it was like distracting from the main storyline, but there wasn't so little that we didn't care about the relationship.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really well done. And there were really short clips from it. It was really like, jolt, stick us in.
Yeah.
This should be in your head. You should know this. And like what was revealed at certain times was really well.
Yeah.
And I thought that sticking that throughout it was really good for like keeping you inside her motivation for why she's doing this. Whereas if you stuck that all at the start, you would have kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't have been playing in your mind as it's all happening, whereas that was really clever. Yeah. It did surprise me that it wasn't quite that rewatchable. Like, I was going into it thinking I'm going to love this as much as the first time. But yeah, still brilliant, fantastic, beautiful movie. Like, genuinely love it. Like, I do this is a movie that I recommend a lot to people.
Yeah.
Especially because whenever people like first get Netflix, they're like, oh, what should I watch?
Yeah.
And this is like up there with like, there's probably like three or four Netflix originals. I'm like, watch these.
Yes.
Don't feel about anywhere else. Watch these. These are great.
100%.
So,
top three. For me, any of these top three of mine, I would happily call my number one. There's very little between them for me.
Okay.
I wasn't sure before I rewatched everything what would take top spot. Okay. I thought I knew, and it actually didn't.
Oh, okay.
So, but my number three is Annihilation.
Okay.
So that works quite well. But yeah, I was exactly the same as you in that I wasn't just as impressed. I say this, it is a fucking incredible movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But like the second time, it doesn't match that level of like, what the fuck, this is crazy.
Yeah.
The second time, I'm just going to start with a couple of things that pushed it to three for me rather than one or two. I did think there's a couple of scenes where the exposition's a bit obvious. Like in that boat sequence. Yeah. It's,
were they obvious for you the first time?
No. First time, I was just like taking it in. But
I wonder if that's something to do with like the fact that you don't need to occur anymore. Like, because you know what's about to be said, you don't need to take it in. So you're kind of like, stepping out a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's funny that we both picked up on it as well. Like, it's that boat thing. And then another one I sort of picked up on was the scene. This is a slight spoiler, but not really. But this is the most unrealistic thing about Annihilation. Natalie Portman's character cheats on Oscar Isaac. And I'm like, who the hell cheats on Oscar Isaac?
She thinks he's dead.
I don't care. If you have Oscar Isaac as your partner... there's no coming back from that. There's no getting better. It's only downhill from there. Sorry, join a nunnery. Like, that's it. There's no point anymore. But like in the scene where it's revealed that she's having an affair or just moving on, like the character, the other, I'm not sure of his name, but he's just like says something very like obvious, like, do you think he knows about our affair? And it's like, no one would talk like that in that situation. It's so like, it's very obvious what's happening. And just, that's just a tiny like one line that I was just like, eh, that's a bit jarring. It's like, doesn't need to be there. It's obvious what's going on. Like, it's an intelligent movie. Like, if you're going to explain that, like, there's a lot of other things you'll need to explain that are more complicated.
This is maybe like a Alex Garland problem that he... Well, he only has these two films.
Yeah.
So I actually bought one of his books, but I haven't read it.
Mm-hmm.
He, especially within Ex Machina, there's so few characters.
Mm-hmm.
So there's maybe like 3 main characters, a few side ones. But in this, there's like 6 main ones.
Yeah.
And no one outside of that gets any development. So I feel like maybe that's...
Not that
he needs to develop every single character that makes anything. But I feel like that issue is probably just maybe Alex being like... Here's a 7th person. How do I juggle all this? He's used to these really, but he does it really well. These really small, complex relationships between very few people. So I think that's maybe him just like learning to grow his cast and like keep the same complexity and quality dialogue within that.
Yeah, that's honestly where my like criticisms for it stop. Because it's just great. Like, and I think there was benefits as well from watching it a second time around. There was definitely things I picked up on and things to appreciate more, because as the film goes on, you learn things that'll impact how you watch it a second time, and certain performances I'm like, that's really well done considering what you find out. So there's stuff like that I really enjoyed about the rewatch. I agree with pretty much everything you said. That bear scene is insane, and it's the effects and the way the action is filmed just show you everything. It doesn't hide behind anything. It shows you everything, and it's just like, whoa, there's no escaping it. It like lingers on things longer than it should, and it's just like, nah, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do it properly, it's gonna be scary, it's gonna be intense, and it's gonna be memorable. And yeah, some of the best sci-fi action like of all time, I would say. Like, it's sort of like
that, it's sci-fi horror action.
It's like the bear scene for me is like of a similar vein to the chest burster in Alien. Like, it's that level of iconic across the genre. Like, I don't know if anything will pick the chest burster, but like, it's that kind of it's that kind of vibe that it's going for, and it's very close to reaching it. But yeah, that, and there's so many great scenes like that. And
I think it's probably a lot more like consistently unsettling, whereas the like chest burster like gets you like that.
Yeah,
we go, oh fuck.
Yeah,
whereas this is just like really sinister and unsettling and stays with you. Whereas I mean, the chest burster kind of like changes the mood in an instant. Whereas this just like runs up the
and you like, you know, shit is about to happen. You're like, fuck, these people are in trouble. And I think that probably my favourite thing about this movie is I feel like every scene is great. I don't think there's a scene in there that's filler. I think every scene is important and does something. And I love how it goes from like intellectual, smart dialogue that's interesting to listen to interpret, and immediately changes to crazy, intense action. And there's really nothing in between that. They're having a conversation, and
still,
then
like
shit,
it still works.
Something happens, and it's just like, okay, literally there was no time to adjust there, and I don't need it because they're both done so well. And I was just like, there's no filler in this movie. I was like, this is fantastic. I love the ending of it. I think it's just so trippy, and it's like mesmerizing in a way similar to me for films like Interstellar and 2001 A Space Odyssey, those kind of films that literally you're just like experiencing. You don't necessarily understand everything that's happening.
So is it like, really compared to 2001? Like, that ending's very unexplained, and yet people have like thought about it for like the 50 years since it came out and obsessed over it, and no one now is like, the ending's shit though. Like, so, but people are like, I'm sure maybe at the time as 2001 came out, people were like,
what
the fuck was that?
So
I think that's probably a good comparison to make. Maybe that there probably is something in that less explained things become more acceptable over time, because they're just kind of known whenever you're going into the movie.
So yeah, that for me just works because you're like so invested in all this like crazy intense stuff and this dialogue that's going like not a million miles an hour, but like there's a good pace to it. And then this finale kind of like, it slows down a bit, but also kind of gets quicker at the same time. It's an odd mix, but it just works so well, and I like where it comes in the movie and how it deals with it, and I just love how much potential this movie has for discussion in terms of like the plot, the characters, what's happened, what is it. Like, it gives you enough that you're satisfied, but doesn't give you everything, and I think it gets the perfect balance of that. So I think this would be a great film just to unpack separately, like have full on spoiler chat about it, what things are, and I just think it does that perfectly. But yeah, the only reason it's at 3 rather than 1 or 2 is those tiny little details that I had to pick apart to put a ranking.
The top 2 are phenomenal.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so
yeah, it could be top. Like, I don't think I'll be doing a Natalie Portman list soon, but if I was, I think it could very easily be top. I'd have to sit down and think about all our films, but it could be top of a different list.
I just wish that I think it was Paramount that originally had the rights to this and then decided it was too intellectual for cinemas. Mm-hmm. And I will never forgive Paramount because I just want to see this on the big screen the big sound. And I hope that it gets some sort of at least like anniversary release in a cinema, because I just feel robbed of this experience on the big screen, because it is made for like to be seen on a big screen with big sound like just take it in, because the visuals are just fantastic.
Yeah, the sound's great, isn't it, as well? There's so many. I think I was listening to the soundtrack of some of these things, and it was one of the ones that, like, really, really good. Even that song that I started trying to learn it on the guitar. I kind of got a wee bit just
because I was, like, hoping.
In my head. Yeah, yeah. So good.
Mm-hmm. I remember tweeting after seeing it, being like, what is that film, or what is that song where they're reading books, like someone tell me. And then someone tweets through, I was like, that's immediately going on my YouTube playlist. Like, I listen to that song probably like every day now. So yeah, very good, great film. So you're number 3.
Number 3,
it's gotta be
Inside Llewyn Davis. It is Inside Llewyn Davis. Yeah, I love it. Mm-hmm. I do. I did think it was gonna be, because I knew it was Coen Brothers, I thought it was going to be number 4. It was going to come in just below Annihilation. Part of that was to do with how great this is, but also Annihilation not being as good second time round.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really love this film. The songs are just so good and so funny as well. Like that Mr. President one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my days. So funny. And so catchy. Like, I don't think I realised on first viewing, like, I only watched the once, but I'm viewing it, I didn't realise how catchy that song was.
Mm-hmm.
It was stuck in my head, and I was just finding myself like looking it up and listening to it. Like, it's really good, and it's essentially like a joke song.
Yeah,
but it's just like so good.
Like, yeah, I like it unironically.
I just I just love it. I love the cat.
Yes,
the cat's like one of the best characters in the film.
Go on, Goose.
It's so good. I don't think it's as funny as often as other Coen Brothers films. I think that's one of the things that lets it down, but that's usually because I like the earlier Coen Brothers stuff. I'm wanting to go into it and laugh. I'm just wanting it to be so funny, and I think it's also a lot less exaggerated for them. They normally take these big extreme characters with what they do, and they go really out of their way to just these like very like comical people who are very just like exaggerated, and these people all feel a lot more mellow and a lot more realistic. And I mean, that's fine, but again, just not what I was expecting. But not a bad thing. For them to take a slightly more serious turn with their movie, even if it's definitely not serious. Oscar Isaac's so great. As you're saying, like, possibly one of his best performances. I don't know if that's necessarily just because we get more time with his character than we do in a lot of his films, and it's so focused around him. Like, there's, I mean, probably has scenes without him in it, but very, very few. It's literally just focused on him, and so many of the scenes when they're happening, even when someone else is talking, it's still just looking at him.
Yeah.
So you're just so invested in his character. He literally is just the star. Justin Timberlake and Adam Driver are amazing. John Goodman, in any film he's in, is just made instantly better by his face showing up. Carey Mulligan, so great.
Mm-hmm.
I like anything with like a theme of like loss.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much about what he's lost, and it does it really well and really justifies it all. Doesn't like force it down you, really naturally brings it in. I think just the way I kind of talked about it, like, kind of had these things like the repetitive nature of life, mm-hmm. kind of worked. And then like all about like losing yourself in kind of like a rut. I thought it really represented that really well. And how some people can get stuck in those kind of things. I thought that was very good. I thought it really captured the kind of aimlessness he had of like not having like a place to live, or like I feel although he had like a purpose, he didn't have, it wasn't successful, so he didn't feel like he had a purpose.
It's interesting as well how like I think you watch it and you get a real sense of just his life and like what's happening and what like his life looks like. Yeah, it's set over I think roughly, but it feels like it could be like a year of his life almost. It's interesting.
I quite like the tone. It is a different tone to Coen Brothers, but I don't think I should judge it as a Coen Brothers film. I think I should just judge it as a film, so I think I should say that's a good thing, that it's got its own tone. It's quite unique.
Yeah, I don't think you would, if you didn't know this was a Coen Brothers movie, you wouldn't think it's, this could be Coen Brothers. Like, you can, when you know, you can see their influence, but it's, I think that's quite impressive from them in a way as that they can distance their normal tone and create something quite different.
Yeah, it's a good story, and I like films that don't feel they need to stick a happy ending at the end of something.
Yeah,
and it seems it's definitely like as if the Coens and their more recent films are going for more like slice of life type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like a story, here's a bit, here's like Hail Caesar was just a day, like so much happens up, but it's just a day. This is what we think this person's life would look like, and then even more so, like all the things in The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, they're all like over about a day. I can't think of all of them. Maybe Liam Neeson's one's over a bit longer than that.
Yes, it's over quite a while, but
The two or three that I can think of in my head, other than that, are like a day.
Yeah, I think two. Just like not even a full day, like just a moment kind of.
So I think they're really hungering down to like a really short experience, and that I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's good. I don't think it's necessarily better or worse, but I just think it's really good. It's a really good way to do it. So,
top two.
So we both have the same top two.
I'm so glad we have the same top two, because anyone who's doing an Oscar Isaac, these aren't your top two. Like, just don't even bother, because there is literally no arguing that these are definitely the two best films. Maybe Annihilation, but on rewatch, Ability.
See, I think Inside Llewyn Davis is just going to improve my head if I rewatch it. But then these two just get better, more you rewatch them as well.
I'm very intrigued to see which way we've gone, because what I have at number two, I was confident, I don't need to rewatch this. This is my number one. I rewatched it and put it at two. And I was like, I felt bad, but I was like, no, they're both incredible, and I'd happily have either. Okay. At number one.
I'll not give anything away once you say it.
Okay, so my number two is Drive.
Okay.
So, Drive is a movie, literally, as soon as I watched it, I was just like, this is amazing. I fell in love with it straight away. I was like, this is a favorite, all-time favorite of mine after one watch. Like, that's all it took. My friend actually got me this for my birthday one year, and it took me a while to watch it, but when I watched it, I was like, this is phenomenal. Like, there's so many, it's so simple, yet so, like, complex and great. Like, and it's just effortlessly cool. I think it's, like, the coolest film of all time, potentially. Like, it just is fantastic. The soundtrack is amazing. It's, like, this soundtrack has honestly, like, become part of my life. Like, there's certain things you go through life and you take from films, or you take an album. This soundtrack is one of those things for me. It's just fantastic, and it works so well in the movie. Like, he just used it so perfectly, and it all fits, and it's so random as well. When you listen to it without the movie, it's certain bits of it sound like you wouldn't think that's in the same soundtrack as this, but they work fantastic in the scenes. And like, it when you think about it as well, the narrative is kind of strange because it goes from this kind of like heartwarming drama almost like to this like just violent, somber crime thriller.
Yeah, but I think it like really like gradually does that.
Yeah.
And it fits so well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and because of the like opening sequence being so good, mm-hmm. it really sets it up to justify that as well. Yeah. Like that really puts, you kind of get an understanding of who he is and all mm-hmm. the different sides of him while you're going into this, which really helps then you make that transition.
Yeah.
It happens relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like, it's such a short film as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
But yeah, that it's done so well and like so little dialogue in it as well, but you get such a sense for the characters. I think the cast are just so good. Like they can convey so much with just a look.
Yeah.
Like, and this is another example of a film where Oscar Isaac is in it, but he's not in it very long.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what he does in the movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
One of my favourite scenes is when they're having the party for him. He's come out of prison and Ryan Gosling comes out of his apartment and sees Carey Mulligan outside and they're just chatting, and then Oscar Isaac comes out and they have this sort of, not, it's not a confrontation, they just, Oscar Isaac's saying,
just
like,
tension there because yeah, they haven't met and yeah,
like
yeah.
he's that heard of him that
really well, yeah,
and it's just like, ah, this is so tense yeah. and uncomfortable, yet nothing is happening like actually physically, but like I'm just like, this is unbearable, like just the way
yeah.
they're both playing this, like, and Carey Mulligan, like, in that scene, it's just, so like, like, knowing, like, the gaps between what people say is so uncomfortably yeah. long, it's just, like, that is genius. Like, you're conveying so many different feelings from different people at the same time, and you're not saying anything.
It's like, even, like, feelings, like, portrayed through, like, the editing. So, I think mm-hmm. I mentioned this before, but there's, like, a cut where she's staring at Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like looking longingly, but like cuts to Ryan sitting by himself. And
yeah.
Like, oh, we know what's going on yes. there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's so much good stuff going on there. Yeah, it is. Oh, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I think Oscar Isaac has a performance again that is worthy. It's like as good as Suburbicon, where he is worthy of stealing the show.
Yeah.
But it's just that Ryan and Carey are also so good
yeah.
that there's just. Oh, it's just perfect, mm-hmm. but then that really makes it because their performances sometimes you really get too excited for an actor's part whenever they steal the show.
Yeah.
Whereas this, because they're all so good, it's yeah. just gripping the whole way through. Even the wee child actor, like
yeah,
I liked him. He was used really well. Mm-hmm. I meant to look it up because I forgot to say it last time. But there's the thing they mention, like the parable thing about the scorpion.
Oh yeah,
and he's wearing a scorpion mm-hmm, on his
jacket.
Back.
Yeah,
and I remember looking that up, and it was really cool. But mm-hmm. I forget it. But yeah, there's so many really cool things, and so much stuff that just gets better in the second watch.
Yeah,
especially like the build up to the violence.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yes.
it gets down towards the end, but it really earns it, and because it's so rare, it really, really
yeah.
hits you.
Mm-hmm.
It does, which is quite hard to do, especially whenever most of it isn't. Like very graphically shown
mm-hmm.
and there's very few things I can think of that are that like focused on just the reactions of people yet still hit you so hard
yeah.
Which I think is very good, very clever
mm-hmm.
really well done
yeah. Yeah, one of the like favourites as well as the hallway scene is the elevator scene. It's just
yeah, yeah.
it's amazing, like
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just so like no one else, like no, I can't think of another director that would show that scene, something that's so quick, like it's like a sort of 10 second actual thing and it's slowed down so much, and it's just like, and the way it's takes you out of it and then brings you back into it, I'm like, well, how did you think to do that? Like, it's just so clever, and like for me it's one of like the best like cinematic kisses of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because it's just so like, what, like that should have just been a quick like boom 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 done, but no, like you've pondered over it, like you've made it something more than it is, and it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
so brilliant.
I actually didn't think about the fact that that probably would have just like happened in another film.
Yeah,
it'd just been over and done with, and they'd be like, oh shit,
yeah,
changed. Whereas that really takes the time, and like
mm-hmm.
that's like probably my favourite moment in the film.
Yeah, it's definitely
so
up there
good.
For me too.
So good. I also like, think the intro
mm-hmm.
like the whole thing, but then I'm not sure, have you seen The Driver? I think I talked about this the last episode, I'm trying to repeat myself too much. It's like a 1960 film.
No.
So, like, loads of films are based on this film, loads of driving films, especially if the main character's never given a name.
Okay.
It's like where this originated from. There's quite an iconic scene from it where two cars just start driving straight at each other, and then one swerves off to the side to, like, avoid it. It's a really good film. But, yeah, it's just so good. Like, the way that, like, the first scene especially pays, like, so much homage to that, and, like, really... It's just so inspired by it, and like you can see the inspiration throughout the film, like subtly. But this one, but at the start, I really like that it kind of starts with the driver, but then takes it a different way. It goes, it's kind of like the driver, but what if he's violent, or what if he's whatever, which I think is really cool, and it adds so much more. Like the because it's basically just a driving movie, so it adds so much more with all this like stuff of Carrie and her family and everything, and that's really good. It's just. Just a phenomenal film.
Yeah.
Phenomenal
film. Yeah, I've literally nothing but positive things to say about Drive. Like, it's. I wish I had seen it when it came out in the cinema, and because I know it didn't like do amazing at award ceremonies, but it was definitely in contention, and I wish I could have just like been more of a part of it as it came out. But honestly, it's an all time favorite of mine. Like, it's just I can watch it so many times, and never does it lessen the impact for me. Like, it's just great. Yeah, number two. Oh, I kind of want to put it back at number one now after talking about it, but no, number two for me. But honestly, just fantastic.
Well, my number two is also Drive.
Oh,
so the same top two. Yeah, it's so good, so good. Like, brilliant film, and I think I've seen it 3 times now. The first time definitely didn't fully appreciate it.
Okay.
The second time was kind of like.
Oh,
shit. But, like, still thought it was really good the first time, but just didn't, like, go, oh, this is one of the best movies. This is just one of the best movies. Like, this is so good. Like, this is one of my favourites. Yeah, it's such an amazing film. Just because I spoke about with talk about Ryan Gosling last time.
Yeah.
I'll focus a bit more on Oscar this time. So, I really like Oscar's character arc. Even though it's short and it's not in that much of the film.
Yeah.
So, like, he starts off in prison before the film. So... You don't see him until later on, so I really like that. I think I hate my handwriting. He's so likable, even though he's in such an unsavory role. He is ridiculously likable, yet he is the romantic opposition. He was in prison. He was, you know, he has left a son to go to prison and had done all these wrong things, and. Why I think he's so great is still baffling to me, but I just think he's amazing, even though his character is doing all these real dickheaded things and getting himself in trouble and not only dragging his wife and his son into it, but then also dragging Ryan's character into it. And you're, like, still thinking, like, great guy, though. Great guy, I love him. I think he's great. Which is just unbelievable.
Yeah, you oddly kind of root for him as well. Yeah, and you just, like, you really shouldn't, but, like...
Yeah,
there's
something
about it is like odd charisma that it's just like, no, I want him to like get out of this mess for like him and his family.
I think like the dynamic between him and Ryan's always really good because that's really interesting, and I think a lot of the times like romantic rivals really kept at a distance in a lot of films, especially like you think like a rom-com, like he's going after some taken girl that you don't really explore that. So I think that's really interesting. That's something really different. Maybe not completely unique, but very well done and very different. I think it's got perfect story structure. Like, there's nothing I can fault about the like actual story itself. I think it's literally perfect. There's so much tension in every single scene. Like, every time you watch it, you're really on edge. Like, maybe it maybe takes a wee dip after the like entrance, like the car bit at the start. It maybe dips for a bit, but that's just momentarily till it starts climbing the whole film. Which is really good. I really like Ryan, how it shows how his character interacts differently with different people.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a different person than how he's talking to. And I think that's really, I think that's a really good and creative way to like explore a character, to like have them in like, it's not like completely different settings, but like different enough that you get a more of a sense of who he is as a person.
Yeah, because people are different in different scenarios. Like, that's a very human thing. And you don't always get that in movies.
Yeah. And I like that Ryan kind of just seems to be floating through life until this starts, until all this stuff happens. And this is kind of, so you kind of understand why this is this point in the, this is the movie is starting now.
Yeah. Because
this is when his life, like, actually gets meaning. And I think he's searching for meaning. And I think the fact that you see that at the start justifies the ending, because the ending's quite out there.
Mm-hmm.
Not like weird, like Annihilation, surreal stuff, but it's just not where I thought it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you assume one of a few things is going to happen and then something different happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're just kept on edge at the end. And I do think the ending's perfect. I think it's not where I thought it was going to go, but it's completely deserved. It's going to be built up to right. And yeah, I just thought it was brilliant. Really loved it.
Yes. Drive for the win.
So our top films are both the same.
Yeah, we're so predictable.
Ex Machina.
We have indeed.
We'll just go through it at the same time.
Yeah, we may as well. Like, I did sort of think, I was like, because I remember I asked you, I was like, is this going to be, are we ranking Oscar Isaac's performances or the movies he's in? And then I quickly realised, I was like, oh, my favourite Oscar Isaac performance is in Ex Machina. So this works out well, because I think he is amazing in this as Nathan. Like,
yeah, this is like whenever I was saying Llewyn Davis, most people would consider his best. Or you were saying like, this is the one I was like, maybe Ex Machina.
Yeah,
like he's so good. I don't think he's in it as much, which maybe would make it not jump into people's mind as quickly to best performance. But what he does do is just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Like, I love the setup between his and Caleb's characters. It's so good. Like, it's just the whole way through it, he's like, the way, and I'm sure Oscar Garland has a big hand in this as well, like how he like is always like asserting his dominance over Caleb, like intellectually, like physically, like when he first meets him, he's like punching the crap out of that bag, and like in all the discussions, he just constantly like kind of shoots Caleb down, but like not in a really obvious way where he's like, you're stupid, but he's like, he's trying to imply that his intelligence is like misguided and he's trying to do it, and even the way he like interprets what he said about him being a god and like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And like even things when they're climbing up that waterfall, like it cuts to the point where Caleb is still climbing up, but Nathan's just standing there like at the top, like he hasn't had the struggle to get there.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, this is so well done, like,
and you don't
that
know,
dynamic.
You still don't know at the end of it, like how much of that was him doing it on purpose to fuck with.
Yeah.
Him, I can't remember characters' names. Donald Gleason.
Yeah, Caleb.
Caleb, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't know how much of that was intentional to fuck with him as part of the whole thing, and how much was just his character. But I like that, like,
Where does that meet?
Yeah, yeah.
How much of that is like Nathan, or how much is it the test? Like, it's just everything about this movie. Like, this is another one. I think it's probably an Alex Garland thing. Like, I just knew filler in it. Well, actually, I slightly disagree with what my own statement there. I have one issue. It's not really an issue. It's just something I think could have been tweaked better. So this is a slight, this is a spoiler. So if you haven't seen it, don't listen to this. But so the ending, I think, goes on too long. Just a touch. I think the perfect ending is Caleb banging on the glass door and Ava going into the elevator. And I think that's all it needs. I don't think you need to see Ava walk through the front room and go to the helicopter and then go to the junction. Like, we know that's where she's going to go. She said that's where she wants to go. And, like, I just think that that ending is such a better impact. You're like, Kill's been completely manipulated and he is now trapped. And, like, Ava is free.
I think I disagree.
Ooh.
I really like that ending because I think I've spent, like, every time I've watched it, I've spent that time at the end as she's walking out, just like in awe, like, fuck, what's she done? Do you know what I mean? And I like that extra bit of time at the end to sit in it and be like to think.
Yeah.
To not be like thinking about it afterwards, that, because a lot of films, whenever they have those kind of endings that you're talking about, you then spend the credits sitting there being like, oh shit.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I really like that Alex Garland, like, kind of like lets you, like, stir at her as you're going, fucking what? Like, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I really like that.
Yeah, I actually thought about it like that.
But, like, I suppose that depends whether that's what you're thinking as you're watching that. Whereas, I don't know how many times you've seen it, but maybe the more you see it, the less you're. So, like, for me, like, the tension really held up. It was something that it's so, like, not reliant on the twists, but the twists, like, are figuring things out about it is such a core part of the film.
Yeah.
That I was a bit worried that it wouldn't be as good second time round. But it, like, completely still was phenomenal. I think if I watched it more than that ending, I wouldn't need that extra time, but I definitely feel like I was sitting there. I feel like I could have done with an extra, like, 20 minutes of that, just so I could sit there and, like, still revel in being, like, messed with, like, emotionally on every single level.
I know, it's just, like, it's, I think the strength of it is that the main concept of it, the, like, just the Turing test, those sessions are so engaging anyway, with even without the, like, exterior narrative around it. There was just, like, I think there's, like, 7 or 8 sessions, and, like, if it was just made up of that, like, I would still think this was a fantastic film.
There's definitely, like, a film to be made in just that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's as good a film, but it's definitely. Like, that's definitely what a less perfect screenwriter would go for.
Yeah,
it's just that wee concept, whereas he's built this whole thing around it. And, like, it's the fact that he's made it so complex, even though it's, like, 3, maybe 4 characters.
Yeah.
And he's just, like... it's just unbelievable.
Yeah. It's just fantastic. Like, and I love, as well, how it's, like... It's not preachy. Like, it's not, like... It's not being, like, oh, watch out about technology. Like, some films are, I think. And, like, I love... Black Mirror, like, it's one of my favourite TV shows, but sometimes I'm like, okay, I get the point. But I don't feel like this does that.
It isn't like drumming the same thing home. It's a lot more like, it's not like technology's bad, it's a lot more be careful with it.
Yeah, and like
really justifies you being like, oh fuck yeah, yeah.
And like people and technology mixing, and like, I love how it's kind of like, it does just weave into commentary on like search engines and like how the corporations use search engines, how it's like what people are thinking, it's how they're thinking, and it's just really playful on things that other films and other writers would think were being clever, but then Alex Garland's just like, let's look at it from this side and flip it, and you're like, oh flip, that's so much more interesting and engaging, and you can do so much more with that than just looking at the like obvious sort of idea behind that. You just look so much deeper into all of it.
I think also I love just her, like, not just her acting and her performance and all, but, like, the way they've made her look.
Yeah.
Like, she looks so different. She doesn't look like a robot or an android or whatever. She looks so unique, and it's just, like, it's just how good he is at creating these unique settings. Like, and these unique sort of villains. Like, I don't know if I'd say that she's a villain in its truest form, but, like, she's just so well created and so well done and looks so good.
Yeah.
And lots of stuff about how he got the team to design her, like how he was like not letting them look at other androids to base it off. Like, no, this has to be completely unique, you know. If you wanna look at stuff, go look at art, and like that's where you should get your inspiration from, not from like what other people have thought androids will look like. Like, you need to make this really unique.
Yeah.
And I think it just looks beautiful. Like, it's really well done. Just even her performance is just brilliant. Yeah.
It's mental.
So good.
I think that I'm pretty sure that the only Oscar it won was for visual effects. I think so. I'm not sure. I think I just remember being ecstatic that it won anything, but I'm so glad that it won that, because it definitely deserves that. It's fantastic the way that's been created and brought to the screen. I think as well, like, it's, I love so much about it, so much of the deep stuff, but that dance sequence is just fantastic. Yeah. Like, so out of the blue. But, like, totally works with Nathan's character. Like, I can really just buy that he would drop that and Caleb. And that's another sort of thing about asserting his dominance. Like, he just doesn't give a fuck. Like, he'll just do it. And he's just clearly making Caleb feel so uncomfortable, but he just doesn't give a shit.
But you also don't understand, like, is he intentionally making him uncomfortable? Or is it just that he's been isolated for so long that he doesn't realise killing one of your androids to do, like, sexy dance with you is a bit weird.
Yeah.
Bit weird, bit out of the blue, but works so well.
There was that trend on Twitter for ages, actually. I think there's, or maybe just one Twitter account that they upload, I think it's every day, and they upload that dance sequence, but just with a different song every day, and there's like, there's so many hilarious videos with different songs used in it. But, yeah, it's just so that good. How he can inject such a, like, silly, stupid scene into this deep, intelligent sci-fi film, and it doesn't feel out of place in the slightest. Like, it just feels perfect.
I think
that's
what good sci-fi, especially good sci-fi horror, really does, is take a small fear we have about today and then just heighten it the fuck up and just, like, really, like, scare the hell out of you. I know, like as you're talking about, like, Black Mirror, that's what that is. The best episodes of that are something small that it's like, oh, imagine if this was, like, on steroids, being, like, ridiculously terrifying, and you'd be like, oh, fuck me. this is scary shit. And I think, also, like, I think this is one of the films that really has me, like, gripped to it from start to finish. Like, the tension, like, I refuse to look away from the screen. Like, if I've, like, I wouldn't want to, like, blink. It's just so good. There's so much going on. There's so much to sit in constantly. I didn't find any moment of it slow.
No.
Like, it just, from start to finish, perfect. I honestly don't think I could find anything to improve about this movie.
Yeah.
Like, just think it's perfect. The ending's one of those, like, heartbreaking endings that makes the movie so good.
Yeah.
That, like, you're like, oh, I don't want it to end like that. But that's what makes the film. Like, that's why it's so good. And, like, any single time that it lulls ever so slightly, then a bombshell drops.
And you're like, oh, fuck.
And he's literally, Alex Garland is just playing you. He's just giving you a wee bit of things so that when the bombshell drops, it actually has the full effect. Because if you had that full tension going into that, it wouldn't land. So he just drops a wee tiny bit, you start to relax, and it's like, fuck.
I know. Like, he's like, knocked it out of the park completely with his first two directed. Like, who has as strong first two films as that? Ex Machina and Annihilation, like...
Tarantino? Pulp Fiction? Reservoir Dogs?
That's a fun debate. But yeah, like...
He also has two really good first films.
Like,
you ever seen Richard Iowati's first two films?
No, I haven't.
Of his only two. I have Richard Iowati's book, which I accidentally read without having watched any of his films.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, I should probably watch the films he's talking about.
Yeah, like,
so good.
And especially, like, two of the same genre as well. Like, it's so different. And, like, not just, like, the horror same.
This is a lot more subtle.
Yeah.
It's, which is really good. Though I also found there's a lot of times in this movie, even watching it the second time, I'd kind of not remembered everything. Is it the second time, maybe the third time? I can't remember how many times I've seen it. But even watching it again, there was so many times when I didn't remember specifics, and I was sitting going, why doesn't he do this? And as soon as I'd say that, he'd do it.
Answered it.
But I remember, like, as that was happening, I was, like, remembering that I thought this the last time too. Like, he literally, Alex Garland is inside your mind. There's as many mind games going on between, like, you as the viewer and Alex Garland as there is between, like, all the characters in it. It's just messing with you on so many levels. It's just so good. And, like, every single emotion he wants you to feel lands. You, like, empathize for every single character. You're, like, even on Nathan's side, like, it's just unbelievable. I don't know how it does that. Like, just the concept, the dialogue, the character development, CGI, perfect. It is. And it's really well filmed, and it's a really good setting. It was filmed in, like, two separate houses and buildings near each other
that
were designed by the same architect, and then they made it into one. And, and then because of that, they kind of said that because it doesn't exactly work as a full building, like, you couldn't, like, picture it in your head, that nearly messes with you more. Same way something like The Shining does, where the layout doesn't completely make sense. So it kind of gets in your head, and it's just even more unsettling, which is just so good.
I'm glad we both settled on the same number one.
I was
definitely expecting Drive to be there for me, but just rewatching Ex Machina, I was like, nah.
It's so
complex, but so, like, not hard to follow, and, like, it's just so easy to engage with and on every level. It is pretty perfect. Like,
unbelievable. I think that's us.
Got there in the end.
Very, very good. I really enjoyed it.
Apologies if I drilled over the mic at any point, just talking about Oscar Isaac.
That's fair. I was going to get a drill guard for you just to keep it safe, but...
be buying a new mic after this.
Hanging up to dry. That was very good.
Well, thanks for having me on.
No problem at all.
Mm-hmm. We'll come back in 10 years and do another 10 Oscar Isaac movies.
And I'll turn into life itself. Awful, I think it is. So thanks for coming on.
No worries, anytime.
This has been The Pope and the Pill. Thanks for listening. Go follow us on Facebook. We now have a Twitter, the one that I got the 12 likes on. I actually have nearly 30 followers and feel slightly famous. It's at Pope Pill, which was designed just to give everyone as many characters as possible in their tweets. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time, and goodbye.
Bye.